Coffee and Chromosomes is brought to you by the charity Wouldn't Change a Thing, creating a world where negative perceptions of Down syndrome are a thing of the past. If you would like to hear more about a certain topic or even from a particular individual, then please get in touch with us. Email us at podcast@wouldn'tchangeathing.org and we'll do our best to try and make it happen. Welcome to another episode of Coffee and Chromosomes. I'm sure many of you have come across the blog, Facebook page, or Instagram account, Don't Be Sorry, which follows the journey of Oscar pretty much since birth after he was shortly diagnosed with Down syndrome. Oscar's mum, Sarah, writes a beautiful, authentic account of their journey as a family, which has evolved as time has gone on. Sarah, who joins us today, has gone from professional dancer to mother to published author and is now studying to become a counsellor, as well as recently completing book number 2. Now, Sarah, I'm a working mum of 3, but I'm exhausted just saying that list of all you do. How do you even like find the time?
I don't know. I suppose I haven't got a proper job. That sounds really, I don't know.
You're a mum. I think that's like proper jobs.
Yeah, that's true. No, a mum definitely is up there as top. But I don't know. I'm somebody who likes to keep busy. As soon as kind of they started to go to preschool and some of them to school, I was like, oh gosh, I've got all this time. Like, what am I going to do? And I'm not somebody who just sits around and, you know, doesn't do stuff. So yeah, I've taken on all these different things.
So when you had Oscar, you went on and you had Alfie and Flo, you had them quite close together in age. So you had 3 under 4?
Yeah, I think when I had Flo, my youngest, Oscar was 3 years and 3 weeks old. So yeah, like literally, it's so silly. No, it wasn't silly, but like in hindsight, I don't know. I think I was just so, I actually don't know what I was thinking. I just thought I'll get it done. And I was really lucky to fall pregnant. You know, I know lots of people can't fall pregnant quickly. So I was really grateful, but I don't think I realized how much it would be. You know, it was carnage a lot of the time.
But benefits to it now, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. And because they're like now, I mean, Oscar's 9, Alfie's 8 and Flo's 6. So they're all really close in age and they like playing together. We've just been to the cinema today. They like the same movies, you know, it's just, you know, they get on really well. So
do you think it helps Oscar?
Oh, 100%. Like that was, well, kind of our main reason that we wanted to have Alfie so quickly. But yeah, I think it massively helps him in every area, like socially and like, yeah, motor skills wise, emotionally, and just, he just copies, he wants to be like them, you know, and actually, you know, he's his own person in his own right. But yeah, they're thick as thieves.
So when you had Oscar, you said that part of the reason why you wanted to have another so soon was to obviously try and be there as like a role model or help support Oscar. A lot of parents can be put off by having more children. Now, if we kind of go back to when you had Oscar, you know, obviously from your blog, you didn't know that he had Down syndrome until he was born. And without kind of being drawn back completely into, you know, because I feel like when us mums have these chats when they're born, it can really be heavy having that conversation again as to what happened. But so you found out he had Down syndrome, you struggled, you were shocked with the news initially. But then so much good has come out of it. You've got 2 other children, etc., that it didn't scare you again having more children.
Yeah, I mean, I think I look back at having Alfie and I think initially I was thinking, oh yeah, it would be good for him to have another, you know, to have a brother or sister. But I think also, if I'm completely honest, I was sort of kind of trying to get pregnant to make up for some sort of failings that I'd, you know, felt. I felt this huge pressure to have, you know, the typical baby that everybody else had. I felt like I'd let Chris down, which was ridiculous because he never once has ever made me feel like that. I felt like I'd let like his mum and dad down, which is ridiculous as well because they couldn't have been greater about it. But I don't know. I think there was that. And then I will be honest with you, I was nervous about having another baby because actually it wasn't the Down syndrome. I think I could have probably coped with another child with Down syndrome, but I think it was more about I'd had such a shock the first time round and I felt so sort of like the rug had come from under my feet. I felt really nervous about going on to have a second and subsequently a third child, knowing that could potentially happen again.
Yeah. you know, you said that about feeling like you had failed.
Mm.
I think I felt much the same. I think a lot of parents do. Oh, a lot of mothers do for yeah. some bizarre reason. Because, yeah, no one made me feel like that. But I did. I felt like I'd let Hamill down. I felt like I'd completely let my parents down. Hamill's parents. Like, yeah, it was. And it weighs heavy, right? And you're just like, I need to correct this
yes.
somehow. How can I make it better? Which now sounds absolutely ludicrous, obviously knowing where I guess we both are in our mm-hmm. in our journeys. But had you always planned to have more children? So before you'd had Oscar, were you like, oh, I'm gonna have three children and blah blah blah, like mm-hmm. what was the plan before?
Plans don't go to plan, do they? But I mean, Chris and I are both from families of three. So I think in our heads, we'd always liked three. And yeah, I think it was important for us to have not only a brother close in age to Oscar, but then having Flo as well. So that like later on in life, when we're not around, I always think, you know, it's nice that they've got like each other and it's not just one other child. But I mean, gosh, you know, we can't really, you know, you get what you're given, don't you? And I think there's pros and cons to every situation. Like the other day I got in trouble because I was talking about siblings and how great it was. And then a lady came back and said, well, you're lucky you had that, you know, choice that you were able to have more children after your child with Down syndrome. And then I felt guilty and I was like, listen, there's so much value in just having one child. Like, look at all this, you know, how much you can pour into them and how brilliant they could be. And yeah, so I don't think there's probably no ideal situation. Often I feel guilty that I'm not giving Oscar enough of my time because I have two other children who need me. But then equally, I think, well, he's got to learn that I can't always be there for him as well, you know?
I think it's interesting because we need to have an honest conversation about that because yes, it's difficult and you have to be aware that it and be like kind of aware of the fact that there are a lot of people that will struggle to have more than one, plenty struggle to have even any.
Mm.
But the reality is that a child with Down syndrome with siblings, it makes such a positive difference.
Yeah.
And so like there needs, and that's the stuff that you don't really think or know or research or read about at the early stage, right? Like we didn't do it with Kush. Mm. Like we didn't intuitively, you know, that's what you kind should, of want to do and should do, and it should have a good impact. Mm. But you don't read anything about it. And then you have these conversations. You're like, oh, wow. Like you literally had this kind of same sort of feelings and thoughts that
absolutely, yeah. And I'd look at people in like we joined a support group fairly soon after we had Oscar, and I'd look around at them and think, oh, look at them, they're like a typical family. They've got a child with Down syndrome, but they've also got siblings and their parents still work. And you know, I kind of wanted that. I wanted that like normal sort of life. And I know normal is such an annoying word, but I wanted just what everybody else had. It just happens that Oscar has Down syndrome, but actually we're just a pretty average family of five, just getting on with our lives, you know?
Yeah.
How, I'm not sure if you've ever written much about this, but how was Chris when Oscar was born?
So obviously like the first sort of night we found out in the middle of the night, which I also think is just horrendous. Like, I mean, they kind of broke the news to us at like 2 a.m., you know, about an hour after. It's ridiculous. Like, why couldn't you wait? I did write this in my book. Like, why couldn't you have waited till like it was daybreak when there was light and I could see? You know, I just felt a bit like, gosh, this is so bleak. So yeah, obviously he was upset and he cried and he apparently cried to his mum and dad and cried to my mum and dad telling them. But then pretty soon after, he's such a, like what you can't change. So stop worrying about it. He's the opposite of me, whereas I'm like stressy and worrying and just so dramatic about everything. And I'll never forget my mum saying to me about like a week later, well, of course he's going to crack, Sarah. He's going to crack. You know, he's outside now, you know, sorting out the garden and doing the borders, but he's going to cry. He's going to lose it. And I was like, yeah, he probably will. And here we are 9 years later. And I don't think he's cried about his diagnosis ever since. I don't think the only time he gets slightly teary is if he has to have an operation or something like that. He can't cope with going down to the theatre and putting him under general anaesthetic. I always have to do that because I'm stronger than him. but yeah, like, and even when I am flapping about certain things to do with Oscar, he's just not that type of person at all. He's just very pragmatic and he just absolutely adores him. So he just wouldn't change a thing, to your phrase.
Oh, and so then when you went on to have Alfie and Flo, you were nervous about the unknown.
Yeah,
because we were nervous, weren't we, when we found out we were expecting Kira, because she's 14 months younger than Kush. Kush was 6 months old, wasn't he? So we were pregnant with Kira, and Kush was really ill at this point as well. I was really scared, weren't we? So we got tested. We had the NIPT test, which I felt really guilty about having. We went round and round and round, didn't we, discussing that? Mm. And I was just like, well, I just need to know. Yeah. I don't think it's going to change anything, but I need to know. But then I was like, actually, it's pointless, because when I was pregnant with Shaylee, I was like, oh, you're kind of, for want of a better phrase, like rolling that dice again. Mm-hmm. And at that point, it was more like, could we cope? Could we then have three children, two with additional needs, and how would we cope? So we got tested again, didn't we? But at that point, I was like, because of like our world had been opened up to so many different conditions, not just Down syndrome, so from some of the support groups we went to, and not just groups of children with Down syndrome, but loads of other groups like Play Skills and stuff. I was just, my eyes had been opened up to so many different conditions, which I was completely ignorant to before. And so I kind of said to you that actually this test, it's like kind of worthless in a way, because unless you can test for every kind of little thing, like what's the point? It was like, we don't know. You like what you said now about what Chris was saying, like you get what you're given.
Yeah.
And you just, and then we were like, we'll find a way.
Yeah.
Like we'll figure it out. We will just figure it out. But then I was waiting for that news with both of them. So when Kira came, well, this is about a podcast about me now. When Kira came, I was like obsessed with, I was like, well, where's the pediatrician? Where's this? Where's that? And I was like, where are the doctors? Like there is no one coming. And I was like, what, where is everyone? I was literally, and then the midwife came and she obviously hadn't read my notes, but she was like, what's wrong? Why do you want a doctor? And I was like, well, to come and check my baby, like tell me what's wrong. And they were like, there's nothing wrong, like your baby's fine. And I was just like, well, no one's come, because it was so different to when we had Kush. And obviously we didn't know any different, that this was now how a typical baby's life starts, and you know, after you deliver. But
So
back to you, Sarah.
No, but it's so true. I can't believe, actually, our stories are very similar, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah, so I didn't have the NIP testing, but I had an amniocentesis for both Alfie and Flo, which I know is so controversial, and I'm often told off about it. But for me, I needed to know definitively, and I knew that the NIPT testing thing was still only like 98-99%, and I just needed to know. And I don't know, it filled me with guilt. Like, I remember getting the call to say that Alfie didn't have Down syndrome, and like Oscar was on the floor next to me, and I put the phone down and I was so happy. But then I looked at him and he was so happy, and he was looking up at me like just like really excited, and I just started crying, and I was just like, I'm essentially saying I don't want another one like you, which made me feel really bad.
I don't know, because in many ways it makes complete sense, the mental strength required initially to come back from that whole situation, which I'm sure you've read, I've read, we've all read. You know, the sense of like when you didn't know and there was no pre-diagnosis, who's the child that you thought you were going to have, you basically mourn exactly in the same way that you would mourn the death of a child.
Yeah.
And that's heavy. That is really, really heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to mentally prepare yourself going forward. Like it makes complete sense. So there's a real pragmatic part to it, which says you don't know if in doing those tests, how that then transpires. But at the very least, you need to be prepared for it.
Absolutely.
And I think on that level, it makes complete sense. Yeah.
I mean, I stand by it now. You know, there weren't many people who said stuff, and this is all through my page. So I obviously have got people following me who are really supportive, but then every once in a while you get the odd person who says something, you know, that perhaps I don't want to hear. But I can look at people, I've got some friends who have went on to have other children after their first had Down syndrome or second, and they didn't test with their next one. And I look at them and I think, that's absolutely amazing for you, but I know that I'm not that person. And for me personally, that's what I needed at the time. So I'll stand by that.
Yeah, fair play.
And I guess therefore, coming back to a lot of the stuff that you've done since with the book, with the blog. So much of it seems to come from trying to convey like a real sense in terms of your own experience and then how that could act as a source of inspiration to so many, particularly when you talk about this sense of your life can be what you always wanted it to be. Definitely. Tell us a little bit about that.
I just think, so when I first had Oscar, I remember thinking, you know, I was really worried that we would never go on holiday again, that I would never be able to go back to work. Just some really silly things. Like I thought I'd lose friends because I had a child who was disabled. And I don't know, the more I talk to people, then I hear that they felt the same way when they've gone on to have babies with Down syndrome themselves. And I kind of thought that if I'd had something to read back then, and there were blogs and Facebook pages back when I had Oscar, but not as many as there are now. I think there's so many now, and I think that's brilliant. There's so many more, but I wanted something that was really realistic and not just, and I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, but a lot of the pages out there were very, and still are, very positive about, you know, all the things their kids are achieving, which I think is brilliant. But I wanted to share a balanced sort of view, which is, yeah, Oz can do some amazing things, but also he really struggles in other areas. And I think it's really important to kind of show that, I don't know, because you want to promote, you want to show new parents that there is hope and that life goes on and it's brilliant, and, you know, but equally, not every child is going to be a Cush when it comes to reading and writing, and or a Lance when it comes to maths, you know, because there's just, you know, they're just, as we all are, so different. Yeah. And so, I don't know, I just really wanted to share a page that was kind of my truth and authentic. You know, even talking about Wouldn't Change a Thing, I think is a brilliant, brilliant kind of platform. But equally, I know I would change some things about Oscar's diagnosis. And that's just my opinion. And that's not belittling anything that anyone else says. But I wish things were easier for him sometimes, because he does struggle, you know? So I guess I am trying to keep it real, and have always, I started writing when he was like 16 months, and it helped me be truthful. And I think in turn, it helps other people. I sometimes get in trouble for stuff that I say, you know.
I think that the easy route is to talk just in really sort of fluffy terms where there's little for anyone to disagree with.
Yeah.
But actually, when you are trying to be very balanced and have that sort of pragmatic sense on what actual life is like, that's when, yes, you are going to have lots of people that will perhaps disagree. Yeah. But by and large, actually, I think going back to our experience again, that literally in minutes, if not hours, after the diagnosis, you're literally just figuring stuff out.
Yeah.
Like your mind just goes straight into that mode, trying to think, okay, well, what will life be like? Are you just trying to sort all of this out? And in that process, there's like, there's hardly anything there at all. And absolutely would have died for something like your blog, which was like, look, sometimes it would be tough, but actually broadly,
yes.
But also, I think that's the kind of the way things are going anyway, in that with just general parenting, there is a lot more out there. People are just being honest about it. Like, do you know what? But no one wants to know the fluffy stuff and my darling and all the gushy stuff. It's like the just hurry up and get to bed. And when you absolutely lose your accent, and it's just actually validating that it is hard. Parenting is, it's the hardest thing.
It is completely the hardest thing. I said this to a friend the other day, like you go to NCT classes and you learn about being pregnant and the first few months of your baby's life. But actually, I'm trying to like negotiate with my 6-year-old little girl, you know, and teach her about, you know, how to be the best she can be. And actually, yeah, that some of that stuff is really hard. And she's only 6.
and it is, people used to say to us when they were so little, you'd always, you know, look to parents with older kids and be like, tell me it gets easier. And they'd say, oh, it does in some ways, but it just gets harder in others. And now, exactly that. So, like, trying to teach your kids stuff around, you know, gratitude and, you know, that they don't just get this, this, and this because that's just what happens. Actually, be grateful and we work very hard, you know, all that. And it's just so hard. And sometimes you just think, oh, to have some wine and just not worry.
I know.
But how do you decide, you know, on your page? Like, obviously, your page is a source of inspiration to many and relief. But how do you decide what to share?
It's a good question. So like, I guess in the beginning, I was an oversharer of everything and anything. You know, I was sharing daily as far as like a post was concerned. I always had stuff to say. And like, even now, I go through phases of one week, I might be like, oh, there's loads to say. And then other weeks, I might think there's, you know, I've got nothing relevant. I'm so mindful now that he's 9 and that, you know, he's getting to an age where he just might be like, Mum, what are you doing? Why are you talking about me like that? I've actually stopped sharing my other two kids online because I just felt like, I don't know, I just suddenly was really aware, like often, not often, but a few times we'd be out and people would like start really talking to them as if they knew them. And I was just like, and they looked like, who the hell are you, you know, you? And I felt like it was a bit of like a property thing almost. And I get that people are intrigued and interested, but there's got to be, I felt like there wasn't a balance and I felt a bit like nervous about that. So I don't know. I feel really, you know, there's so much more I could share about Oscar, you know, some bits that I just think it's not fair on, you know, him to share that, those bits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got nowhere near the amount of followers that obviously you have. And I go through phases of like, I'll share loads. And I think, well, actually, I crap myself that you know, my mum's constantly telling me, you know, what are you doing? And it's the internet and someone can feel this, that, and the other. And I'm like, no, it's fine. It's very, very safe. But then secretly, I'm like, oh my God, like, just shut everything down. Yeah. But like at the same time, it's like, it's finding that way, right? So was yours, like your books. So is that, you know, a safe space and something where you can get it all.
Yeah, it is. But then,
writing the book.
It is, definitely. But then you need the followers to sell the books, don't you? So you've got to keep talking online. I don't know. I don't know how much longer I'm going to carry on doing it. So I've still got another 18 months before I hopefully qualify as a counsellor. And so I'm sort of thinking that organically I might start slowing down with the sharing. But then I've spoken to my therapist about this because I have to have therapy to be a counsellor. And she was like, but actually writing for you is your therapy. I've always said this. It's my online therapy. It's so cathartic. By sharing my story, it helps me because I know many times before I've said stuff to you, Nisha, I've written stuff and you've come back to me going, oh my God, yeah, the same thing happened to me. And, you know, and or I felt the same way. And then I go, oh God, okay, that's great. So she feels like that and that helps me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know how long this will go on for, but I just know it does. People go, oh, it's so amazing you're helping other people. But I just need people to know that it helps me immeasurably, you know, so much more as well. So
yeah, I was going to ask about that because, you know, at what point did you realize that actually this is really beneficial to you as much as it is actually helping so many people? In actual fact, like, did you, right from the start, like almost from the first blog,
I reckon the first
intention was I want to help other people. Was it actually, no, I'm consciously going into this because it's actually going to help me?
Well, funny you should say that because I remember Oscar got, we got told that Oscar needed heart surgery at 8 months. And I went around to my mum and dad's house, Chris was at work, and I said to mum, I've just got this feeling I need to write it down. And we were just about to go to hospital like a week later. She was like, okay, go on then, off you go into the dining room. So I went into the dining room, she looked after Oscar, and I sat and I wrote the story of how his diagnosis panned out, and then after, and then leading up to having heart surgery, and then after his heart surgery, I remember being in the hospital and writing stuff down, and it just really helped me. Yeah. And then I didn't post it for another 6 months. So it was just after Christmas the following year. And I'd had a conversation with a friend of mine who was an educational psychologist. She still is. And she had said to me, why don't you share it, Sarah? And I was like, what do you mean? And she said, put it out there, because some of the best things I read and some of the best speakers, you know, public speakers I listen to are parents, because a parent's perspective is so important. And she said, you can educate professionals, you can help other people in your position. And she said, why don't you just put it out there? So I did. I put it on Facebook and I just put it on my own personal page. And within like a few minutes, it was being shared just by friends and family who, you know, I talked about Oscar having Down syndrome and how I'd felt, but I, you know, not that outpouring of everything. And yeah, and then I think by the next week I'd had like 500 followers, and then it just grew from there. And
amazing.
yeah, it helps me, but it helps hopefully everybody. And it's just about like that gentle education of professionals as well, teachers.
That's amazing, because I've often said and talked to Nish about the drawbacks of platforms like Facebook and Instagram. Mm-hmm. I've got very strong views on like actually, well, or at least a big question out there, like, is it net positive or negative to society at large?
Yeah.
And I think Nish's kind of view always comes back. It's like, actually, there are lots that don't work and is not good. But in terms of just the help that at least she has found, I'm not on Facebook.
Yeah.
You know, that's definitely
not. Yeah, Chris isn't either.
Yeah. I just think he's too toxic broadly.
Yeah.
The amazing networks and kind of help that she's got from that is that's incredible. And I can't really think of another platform for that, not just in terms of practical help, but also in terms of sharing and awareness and kind of driving all of that. And definitely. I think that's amazing. But then with that comes the other side, as you've said, the negative comments. How do you deal with that?
You're Debbie Downers.
Do you know what? Like, there might be, I might put a post up and it does well, and there might be like however many likes and comments, and there might be one negative comment, and that will be the one that I will stew over, and I will think, right, how am I going to respond to this? And 9 times out of 10, I do not respond to it anymore. Like I would have done, you know, when Oscar was younger. Often now I just block people or hide comments, because I just think, but you know, the thing I'm learning through my course as well is that, you know, when people say negative things, actually it's so much more about them than it is about me or my child. And actually, why am I losing sleep over it, you know? And I have to kind of put it into sort of rationale, I suppose, and just think, well, I've got 250 comments of support and then like one or two negatives. And actually, you know, if those comments and you know, someone like my mom or other people always say, oh, I read the comments, and I think, wow, you're sitting there and reading all those comments too. Sometimes I don't have time to read them, but I think it's nice that other people can read other people's points of view as well. It's not just me, you know.
I'm like you in terms of that, like negative comments. Like I would sit and stew, and it would really bother me, and I'd have to think of a comeback. And then it would probably start something. And I find it really hard to
walk
away and like not have the last word. Don't I, Hamel?
In life.
I can't even speak. Like.
But that, like, honestly, I don't know how you do it. Like, I guess what you just said there, right, in terms of what you're learning through your training.
Yeah.
But still, like, doesn't it, like, how do you just think, okay, I'm just going to go and be zen and parent my kids now and get in a car and not be angry?
I've realized as well, like, I guess it depends, doesn't it? If someone's saying something absolutely awful, like they're a troll and they're trolling Oscar, I just think, crikey, you've got major issues that we don't even need to address. But if it's something that they're directing, like their parent, you know, parent, my parenting choices, then I might get a little bit cross about that. But then I have to think about, why am I getting cross about it? So for example, when people have said before, oh, Oscar's on the iPad quite a lot, I might get a bit uppity about that. And then I think, well, there's probably an element of truth in what they're saying, but actually, have you been in this house all weekend? You know, he needs that time. And actually, then I just think, oh God, it's not even worth, you know, until any of us have walked a mile in each other's shoes, how can we judge each other? And I'm very aware that I put myself online, and so I'm going to be criticized, you know, and I'm small fry compared with some people, you know. So if it's just the odd person, I just think, whatever.
Yeah. So let's talk more about your book number one. So I remember like your post or story, and you were walking to the post box with Flo, I think you were with, and you were posting your submissions and stuff.
Yes.
I was like, wow, that's so exciting. What made you do it? Like, what made you think, I'm going to write an actual book?
Because lots of people kept saying to me, why don't you write a book? You should write a book every time, you know, when I post, like do my posts. And I was thinking, oh, maybe I could. It would be really cool. It'd be a good thing to say I've done. It was my 40th year at that point. So I was like, well, I was coming up for 40. So I was probably having a bit of a midlife crisis. And I just thought, oh yeah, I've got all these blogs, and actually I could sort of make them into an actual book. So yeah, I just thought I'd just submit sort of like some suggestions. And then, yeah, and then I got an agent and then I got my publisher. And yeah, and then this time I was approached again by the same publishers who wanted me to do book two. So
was book two on your horizon? Like, did you think, oh, actually, I'm going to do another one? Or did you think, oh, now, move on?
Not at all. I was literally, I've done one book. And actually, it sort of came up around the same time that I'd already started my counselling course.
Yeah.
So I said to Chris, oh, they've offered me this. And he was just like, don't overstretch yourself. You'll be really, you won't, you know. And when he says things like that, I'm like, I'm going to show you. So, I just thought, oh no, I can do it. I can do it. Although a few weeks ago when it was due in, I was literally going, oh my God, he was so right. I shouldn't have taken on too much, but I've done it now. Like, it was a lot of work, but I got it done.
And when's that coming out?
So they're actually going to relaunch the first book in March for around sort of the time World Down Syndrome Awareness Day.
Yeah.
So they're relaunching the first book and then they're going to bring the second book out in August, I think it is.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Had you ever had anything in your mind previously about writing a book? Or like, are you like an avid reader? Has it never even crossed your mind? Like,
no, I mean, I've always liked writing. I mean, I didn't do it seriously. Like I did English literature as an A-level, but then I dropped it to go and dance, which was ridiculous. I love reading, but I'm at this point in my life, I never have any time. And actually, when I do have time, I always fall asleep when I'm reading.
Yes.
I'm always tired because my child wakes me up so many times. But yeah, I love, my best thing is if I'm on holiday and I have a book and I can just sit and read, which I feel like last time we went on holiday with the kids, I could do. They let me do it because they're of a better age. Now I can kind of let them play. Honestly, I know. Not when we're near water.
So we were lucky enough to get away in half term in October.
Yeah.
I don't think we sat on the sun lounger once, either of us. We were like, when will this happen? So that's music to my ears.
Yes. Well, were you near water? I just caveated that with not when we're near water.
So in the water, floats or whatever.
So how is Ozzy getting on? I know he moved to special school this last academic year.
Yes.
I know that was a really difficult decision for you. You were stewing on it quite a while. Is it working? How is he getting on? And how are you all?
Yeah. It was a massive decision. And I think it was really obvious very soon. I mean, he was coping well in mainstream, but I wouldn't say he was like thriving. I would say that he was getting by. They're a great school. It's like a village school. It was where his brother and sister went as well. I loved that I had the three of them there together. And I just think it got to that point where Oscar's speech has never really come. I say he's pre-verbal. I don't like saying non-verbal because I think non-verbal is like, just feels like there's no hope. But he does say a few, you know, high frequency words in his repertoire. He understands absolutely everything. But I think what happened was initially the other kids around him were great with him. But then as they got older, they get less tolerant.
Yeah.
And then academically, I mean, we are just so far behind. Like, so yeah, it was just, but it was a very obvious next step for us. It was, we were in an infant school as well. So it wasn't even going up to year six.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was like, let's go for a specialist placement. And actually, I just feel he goes off every day so happy. He comes home so happy. And before he was coming, I'd pick him up and he'd just look a bit like just not Oscar, especially in that last sort of few months, although it was COVID. So it was very interrupted. It was horrendous, wasn't it? Yeah. But I trust this school he's in now. I trust that the people in there are qualified and understand what he needs.
Yeah.
And actually someone sort of challenged me on that the other day and said that's not always the case, and actually what you need is somebody to go into the mainstream settings to sort of educate them on our kids and how they learn, because actually if they go to a specialist school then they're just going to learn life skills and he's not going to come on academically. And I kind of don't know what the answer is. I really don't know what the answer is. All I know is for me, he's happier. He is making progress, albeit slowly. For me, just him being happy and settled is the biggest thing.
That's so interesting, because one of the big bits of advice that you hear often is any child with additional needs going into a typical school gain from their peers because they're in that setting every day. And so they kind of seep that in. So did you feel like that actually...
The environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did, definitely. I mean, socially and emotionally, I think he got so much out of being in a mainstream setting. And, you know, I think he loves watching the other kids and he does sort of follow them. And I always say this about Oscar, he wants to do well, he wants to get stuff right. But then, yeah, I actually think there isn't a right or wrong answer. I think it comes down to if the mainstream school is willing to kind of go the extra mile. I think it comes down to the teacher. I think it comes down to the TAs in that, you know, school. Because Oscar had one amazing TA, but then he had a couple of others who, and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but they were just doing it for a bit of extra money. You know, they were like me, you know, who just was another mum who didn't have any specialised skills necessarily, didn't even really want to necessarily learn too much more about it, you know. And so it felt like a bit of a babysitting service at that point.
Right.
So for us, it's been the right decision. But I have so many friends whose kids are in mainstream and are thriving and doing brilliantly. So I, you know, I'm not sitting here going, everybody send their child to specialist school.
No, I mean, I don't think there is a right or wrong answer and all of those things. It's luck. Again, we in infant school just had an absolutely brilliant TA who was studying to special educational needs as well. And she wanted to, you know, to ultimately work in a special education needs school. So, you know, the drive and motivation for her was really high, wasn't it? And then again, you've had others who are brilliant, really lovely and great with him. But again, if the motivation is a little bit different, then it can really make a massive, massive difference.
Absolutely.
Positively or negatively. And I think it's just so hard because you just don't know from year to year. Like, we're now thinking, okay, so we're what, January? My mind's already in year four. I'm thinking, well, who's the TA going to be and what training do they need? And then I'm thinking, well, now I need to start looking at secondary schools and where is he going to go? Is he going to be specialist school? And it's such a minefield. But for me, or for us, I think it's the friendships, the social side of things. Because I think, yeah, okay, he can add numbers up. He can read. He's a great reader, but he doesn't particularly love it at the minute. But I want to see him with friends playing games that they're all enjoying. It's that. That's why I feel that. Because when you're older, you want buddies, you want mates, you want to just...
I think that's the hardest bit of it all, though, is, I guess, how much do you push that?
Yeah.
Right? And with all our children and their spectrum of abilities and disabilities, you do focus a lot on their disabilities and often think, okay, if we just try harder.
Mm.
And then actually, you know, how much do you go down that road?
Yeah.
When actually at the same time, they're just becoming unhappy.
Yeah.
It has the opposite effect.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing.
And it becomes about, is it about them or is it about you?
Yes.
Because for me, for a long time, I realized, oh, I want him to be in this school because I want him to be with Alfie and Flo and I want him to be as normal as possible, which is, you know, and actually that wasn't the right thing for him, you know, and I'm just saying for him, you know, and then I do look at Kush and I think he is a kid that is doing exceptionally well as far as sort of the academic side is concerned, as far as somebody having Down syndrome. So it's like, well, why shouldn't he be pushed? Why shouldn't he be in a mainstream setting, you know? And so, but it's such a worry because you don't know, like you say, about the friendships. I mean, I look at Oscar now and they were saying to me the other day, there's one girl in his class that he gets on really well with and she's like his little, she just bosses him around and he absolutely loves that. And apparently he was halfway through a task the other day and he hadn't finished and she was like, just sit back down, Oscar. And then he sat down and he finished it all and they said he wouldn't have finished it for us. And I just, you know, and hearing these little like tidbits of information, I just think, oh, it's so nice. And when I talk to him about it, his little face lights up, you know. I didn't feel like he ever really had that in the last school, but who knows what the answer is.
How do you, as a family, like obviously with Alfie and Flo, how do you talk about Oscar having Down syndrome? Or is it, you know, they obviously don't know any different because Ozzy's their brother. But how do you, now they're getting older, Do they ask questions? How do you manage that? Give me some advice.
Do you know what? I don't think they don't bring it up much. I can't remember. We were at the traffic lights the other day and Alfie ran to go and press the button and then Oscar ran after him and Chris was like, Alfie, don't run. And he was like, I was going to stop. Like, of course, like I'm eight, you know. And he's like, we know you're going to stop, but, you know, just in case, and it frightens the traffic and, you know, what if Ozzy hadn't stopped? And he was like, oh yes, because he has Down syndrome. And like, he was remembering, you're like, oh yeah, of course. Yeah, that makes sense. So they do sort of understand that it does take Oscar a little bit longer to learn things. Yeah. And I think it's interesting now because there's a really fine line, especially with Alfie, who's eight, because he is quite protective of Oscar. And he'll often say it's because he has Down syndrome, you know, to kind of, I think it's a bit about protecting, but a bit about like, I just need to say this so that you're aware that he's different to like his friends and stuff, you know? Yeah. So we're getting to that kind of like, oh, I don't know. So I don't think Alfie and Flo see him as differently, but they're aware other people are seeing him differently sometimes, you know? And I think that sometimes affects them.
It's like, it's maybe a really silly comparison, but like when Kush was born and people, or even if I was like wherever I was in Tesco's or whatever, and he was just like a, you know, 4 week old, whatever. And I'd be like, yeah, they'd be like, oh, how old? I'm like 4 weeks. He's got Down syndrome. I just had to like tell everyone.
Same. Yep.
Just in case. I'm going to say it first.
Yeah. I know. And why is that? It's so, I did exactly the same thing in baby sensory class. Yeah. Had to talk about the Down syndrome and other people.
I did that at work. We like just having normal conversations, and then I was like, "Yeah, I've got Sun Down syndrome." So,
oh gosh,
like what?
Funny.
Great, thank you.
Oh dear, but Oscar is really, really strong physically, right? Like, I mean, I've messaged you from the start. I think how or I am of him in terms of his, you know, on a scooter, bike, amazing. Skis, like amazing. Yeah. So he's always been strong, has he? Has he had much physio?
He had physio like from 5 weeks and then up until when he could walk.
Yeah.
So I think he was walking earlier than some kids with Down syndrome, but like, yeah, that's always been his thing. And I think in a way, it's been great because he has been able to keep up with the other kids. You know, even now, you know, if we go to a park, he'll be the first one to go over and get the ball, start just casually joining in with someone else's game. He's got no inhibitions about that. Whereas Alfie and Flo will be like, oh my God, what's he doing? So yeah, I love that about him. I love, you know, he went out on the bikes today. He was able to keep up with Alfie. You know, that is sort of his, sounds awful, but like his saving grace, because he can't talk and he can't add up. But you know, there's part of me that's going, oh, but you know, he can do this. But I think, oh yeah, but in life, is he, you know, so what? He can do a forward roll. He needs to learn about money and, you know, but actually, I don't know. We want our kids to do well. We want aspirations, but they're probably not going to be like doctors or, you know, scientists or anything like that. So actually, as long as they can function in life and get on. And I think Oscar's motor skills will help him in life because it's a very social thing, isn't it? To be able to play a game of football or, you know.
You know, you say that about, oh, you know, he can't add up. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, everyone's going to be able to do stuff on a calculator. Money, who's going to have cash anyway? You're just going to tap a card. I think the complete opposite. I'm like, oh, I just wish if he could I just want to see him run with his friends or get on the bike with the girls. And, you know, when he's older, yet have that physical strength to go on a ski trip or to go cycling or I don't know. Yeah. So it's just funny, isn't it? How like opposite.
The opposite. Yeah, exactly. Because, Niche will put a lot on Instagram about, and as you do with any child, like they've done something great and so you just chuck it on there, right?
Yeah.
A lot of that for Kush happens to be stuff like, oh look, he's read a book or done this great sum or whatever it is. But you know, when it comes to physical stuff, he's zero interest. Just like going for a walk.
He's lazy. He's
like going for a walk. The denial and the defiance is incredible.
It's bribery again. It's nothing like He's like, ah, oh, we'll go there and then iPad. And you're like, no, or a snack. The boy is lazy. Like,
it's interesting you say that about you putting that sort of stuff on there. And I think I do the same with motor skills. But it's so hard, isn't it? Because actually, I'm really aware when I put stuff on about Oscar, you know, look at Oscar, he went down the ski slope today or started riding a bike without stabilizers. Like, when I say that, everyone's really great. And then there'll be the odd comment from someone going, well, my child will never do that because, you know, they've got low muscle tone or whatever. And then you start to feel guilty. And then you think, should I be sharing that? Yeah. But then I think I've said it to you before, like, I look at Chris reading his books or whatever he's doing and feel that my initial pang will be, oh, I wish Oscar could do that. But then on the flip side, it gives me hope that maybe one day he will.
Yeah.
And also, like, let's celebrate all our kids for different reasons, you know, like, and actually how amazing that he is going out and sort of proving everybody wrong. And he's so capable in that respect, as far as Kush is concerned. And likewise, Oscar, in the fact that he can flip on the trampoline.
It does give you that hope, that inspiration. Because that's the first thing I did when I saw Ozzy on skis. I was like, look, we can go skiing.
Yeah,
I was like, she came to show Hamill. And I was like, it gave me that hope that, okay, actually, we'd probably written off skiing again, hadn't we? But that really made me think, well, why? Because look, we could possibly go, maybe not right now, but maybe in a few years' time. So I think you're right. It does give hope.
I just think it's the standard magnification, if that's even a word, of feelings throughout, like, with everything.
Yeah.
And it's natural to feel you want the best for your child.
Yeah.
And when you see another child do something, the initial feeling, regardless of what child it is like, oh, well, I would love for my child to do that.
Yeah.
And that's a fleeting thing. It comes and goes. Yeah. But I think in this situation, particularly with Down syndrome,
yes,
because it's all about learning, it's just magnified and there's so much heaviness to it. So,
yeah,
it's one of the detriments, though, of social media, isn't it? That there is such a platform, and generally a lot that's on there is very, very positive, that we are at massive risk of alienating a good chunk of the Down syndrome community. Like, and that's because it is people who do see these things and think, well, that actually might not be my reality, or their child might have very, very complex need. So that is a worry. And I think when we were speaking to Sue Buckley, we were speaking to her about that. And we said, you know, what else, what can we be doing? Because there are so many positive influences out there, which is great, but we are alienating a portion of our community. So what can we do? And she just said how it's just so important to actually reach out community. Because it's that face-to-face, which we haven't been able to do, obviously, for the last few years, but it's that face-to-face reaction that you need to try and draw it out of people, because that's what they need. And sitting behind a screen looking at all these things is only going to make them worse. So that is a big consideration, isn't it?
Definitely. No, she's so right.
So what are your hopes and dreams for Oscar? Bigger?
Gosh, what am
I? Question.
It is a big question.
I always say they're probably very similar to the hopes and dreams I have for my other two kids, because actually I just see him in the set. I mean, yes, there are going to be challenges along the way, but then I think that's the same with Alfie and Flo. They're just different types of challenges. I think I want him to be happy. I want him to be healthy. I would like, if he wants to, for him to live independently, or, you know, with assisted living or with friends. I will do everything in my power to let him live the life that he deserves, which is, you know, to feel valued and have purpose like we all want in life. And that's really what it comes down to. Chris always says, well, he's going to live at the end, you know, in our house forever, or in the shed in the back of the garden, and we're going to get on the pub and that will be it. I'll look after him. And I'm like, no, he needs to get a job. And, you know, we have quite conflicting views, because I think I have more of a, like, come on, like, let him go out and be what he wants to be. Whereas he's a bit more protective, I suppose. But I don't know. I just want him to be happy, really. That would be what would make me happy.
And do you feel that there's been a step change from a societal standpoint that will allow him and Kush and other children growing up right now, perhaps differently to what it used to be, even 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
I definitely think there has. I think Yeah, I mean, I still feel like there's so much further we could go. But I think, you know, it has absolutely, people are, it's changed, the people's mindsets have changed. I think the fact that our kids are in mainstream schools, people are seeing people like that in the community. Like there's lots of work, is it work fit schemes, you know, things like that. I just think that's so important. So yeah, I do think there's been a shift. I still think though we can't change everybody's opinions. And when I think about my preconceived idea about Down syndrome when I had Oscar, it's only now because I've lived it that I have changed my opinion. But who knows, somebody out there who hasn't come into contact with him, they might just think, oh gosh, that life is awful. I think that's why it's important that people like me are online, and you know, you guys are sharing your podcast, because it's all about education and just sort of showing our kids
I totally agree. Like, I think we've come leaps and bounds. Like, I think the biggest difference, of course, is going from, like, you know, 70s 80s, when it was just complete institutionalized, etc. Whereas I think even then, more in recent times, there was almost, it was like, okay, vaguely accepted, but mostly given up hope. Whereas now, I think inclusion is like the default almost everywhere in any organization. And of course, whole bunch of backgrounds, and more so in terms of disabilities, neurodiversity, for example, as well. And so that gives me a lot of hope, a huge amount of hope.
Definitely.
Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on, Sarah. It's been lovely to speak to you. I don't know if you've heard, but at the end of our podcast, we always ask everyone, well, we give you three sentences and we would like you to finish them.
Okay.
Short and sweet is the aim. So the first one is, the most challenging part of motherhood for me is?
Lack of sleep. Oscar doesn't sleep, just so you know.
I have seen that part in your I think we're both generally up most days at 5:30.
Yeah, always.
If I could change one thing to make Ozzy's life easier, it would be?
Oh, man. See, my first thought was speech, but actually, I don't think he's that bothered. I think he's absolutely fine. So it would make my life easier, but I don't think it would necessarily make his life any easier, because he gets his point across. But then I'll say speech, because I think that is important, isn't it? I just like him to be able to have a chat with his brother and sister.
Yeah. And last one, the best thing about being Oscar's mum is?
He's opened my eyes to a world I didn't think I wanted to be a part of, but a brilliant world that just, has changed my life for the better.
Oh, amazing.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much for your time.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure.
Bye. What do you see when you look at me? Oh, man, where do I start? A beautiful girl with a beautiful smile in a beautiful heart.
Coffee and Chromosomes is brought to you by the charity Wouldn't Change a Thing, creating a world where negative perceptions of Down syndrome are a thing of the past. If you'd like to hear about a particular topic or from a certain individual, email us at podcast@wouldn'tchangeathing.org.